Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
So today we're going to talk about the feeling of loneliness.
Loneliness tells us that I need connection.
And also that I'm sad, which is totally fine. But sadness comes from that connection and that need. They're all looking at me because I feel lonely a lot.
I'm just looking at you because you're moving your microphone. I think this is hard because a lot of people aren't willing to talk about their loneliness. And there is even some shame around the idea of being lonely, that if I feel this, I must be wrong or do something wrong. But loneliness is something that all people feel.
And are often numbing it with substances, with pornography, with
other people who aren't real connection.
Fantasy.
Oh. Yep.
And the other thing that we're doing is we're numbing it with buffering behaviors, scrolling on our phones, watching YouTube videos, binge watching TV, those kinds of things.
There's really good TV though.
Yeah, there's some good shows. Sorry.
Just watch it with somebody else or talk about it later.
Okay.
Oh, so if I talk about it with people, then it's okay.
You can still watch The Bachelor.
Because I actually stopped watching that.
I did.
You did?
But that is a real great example of that, because I think that is part of that quintessential I'm lonely, therefore I'm going to watch The Bachelor. And to be fair, I think we all watch The Bachelor because we want to feel better about our own selves.
There's some truth about reality TV there. But the other thing about The Bachelor is when I started watching it, I actually had no desire to watch it, but we had work lunches where everyone talked about it. And so I wanted to know what they were talking about. And so just watching it was about being able to have the conversation later.
Yeah.
And I just enjoy the conversation without watching it.
He's like, they did what? Cool. Glad you're still watching that.
I was very into different shows.
You're good.
That were equally trashy.
Yeah, you're good. No, I think that you bring up a really good point with loneliness. We do things to try to essentially like get people to accept us, allow us in. Some things that we don't even feel comfortable or really ideally when we're looking at it, like, I mean, I like it for the social experiment part of it, but honestly, The Bachelor was not my favorite show, not my favorite thing to do. It's just fun to also talk about with people. And so we sometimes do things just so we have the experience, so that way we don't experience that loneliness, like you would call FOMO, right? Fear of missing out.
Can you be around people and still feel lonely?
Absolutely.
Can you be alone and not feel lonely?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long?
You're going to come at us with the stat.
I know.
You know, I actually don't have a stat for that one. I know.
Okay, move out of your shame for not having a stat. Let's get back to the topic.
Deep breaths. You cannot go on indefinitely alone and still not be lonely, though.
You have your moments. I think, so as the person who's currently single in the group, and you guys won't be single ever, I'm sure, but maybe one day my status will change. We'll see. But for right now,
submit applications to fateresilience@gmail.com.
You'll have two therapists screening it. So you can't hide.
You especially can't hide from me. I will find it.
I know. Jen and Taylor are both very essential with that. But I think just that's been a lot of my own personal work, because I think just in my friend group of single people, in the community of singleness, right, whatever it is, that is a huge topic. That's a huge issue. Whether it is that you are physically single or you are not connected to your partner and you feel that way, you can also feel that loneliness. But for me, I remember sitting in a church meeting a couple weeks back, and a lot of people are expressing how lonely they felt. Okay. They were expressing how hard that was. And I remember having this realization that I remember probably my early 20s, I think because everyone else was partnering up and finding their quote unquote person. We now have since seen a lot of them divorced, so maybe that wasn't their person, but they were partnering up and I was not at the moment. I felt extremely lonely and that burden was heavy. But now I'm in my 30s and I'm not saying all of a sudden life is perfect, but I remember sitting in that meeting, hearing these people kind of expressing what I'd felt previously and realizing I don't really, yes, I have moments where I'm like, it would be great to share this experience with someone. Like I went to Scotland by myself, loved the experience, but there were some times that I would see couples and they were going to museums together and talking about the exhibits. And I was like, oh, that would be nice to share that with someone. And then you have a little bit of loneliness, but I also was able to stay, I felt like grounded in myself to say like, you know, I'm going to enjoy what I have now. And I've noticed that happening more and more and more and feeling more and more not comfortable to say like, I don't need no one, but comfortable in the sense of there's a time to feel lonely. And I 100% I'm okay with that. But there's also a time to say, you know what, I just feel really good with where I'm at. So I think there's a balance.
It's interesting, Haley, as you talk about that, because I got married when I was 34. Mm-hmm. And so I spent longer than my cohort. Yep. Single.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned about the term of off time transitions, right? And when other people were getting married and having kids and that wasn't happening for me, it felt very lonely.
Yeah.
And I still remember that even after now being married for almost a decade. And then I look at other aspects of loneliness, like widows. And mm-hmm. losing your partner later in life and spending time and years without them after you've experienced that connection. I also think about times where people feel lonely in groups that Taylor talked about. And the idea of some people who, when I was a kid, I thought were the most connected, we'll call them the popular kids, that actually had the most pressure of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
Or keeping up appearances, but they were actually truly lonely, where I had a few wonderful friends in high school. And so the loneliness versus fitting in was a different experience for me, where I didn't necessarily fit in as a kid, but I also was not lonely. I had good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the loneliness of being a minority.
Yep.
Not being part of whatever majority there is. I'm a straight white, mostly straight white male. Zac Efron's still alive. living somewhere else where most people aren't white or most people aren't of my faith, which, I mean, regardless of where you go in the world, being American, being white American still carries a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Still lonely to not be around other Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea, as you're saying this, and as I've worked with people, loneliness comes from this idea of I want to be seen and known. And that's the hard part when I think of my years being single and having good friends. And yet the parts of me that now I know in my marriage are seen and known and I didn't have. And then I think about people who go through losing a spouse and missing out on that being seen and known and what that feels like. And that idea of being seen and known is one of the most powerful connections that we can have, not just filling space in a room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what's so important about the connection is being seen and known. That's why you can, you know, be in a crowd and be lonely. That's why you can be at a high school reunion and still feel lonely if you're not there with friends or you and your friends have drifted apart. That's why minorities can experience such loneliness, because their experience is so different. They don't feel seen and known.
Mm-hmm.
Their experience is often dismissed. It's silly to say that people don't see race. It comes from a good place, but it's disingenuous. Of course you see race. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, I don't see gender.
Yeah. You want to be able to validate that there is something there.
And even validating that you don't understand is a type of seen and known. So
absolutely.
If I was to say, I actually don't understand what that's like, acknowledging that their experience is different is a type of seen and known.
When I was living somewhere else and my faith wasn't, was in the minority, again, very not like what most minorities go through. My wife and I actually became very close with a Muslim friend because our faith and Muslims have a lot in common, but also another minority faith. And so there was that seen and known aspect.
Mm-hmm. And I like that you bring that up too, because to be seen and known does not mean I have to go through the same exact thing or have the same background as the other person. I think we often look at loneliness and say, I need to have another, you know, tall, curly haired, female, independent, has a job friend in order to feel seen and known. And you look at it and it's like, actually, some of my best friends really aren't exactly replicas of me in any way. And I think you mentioned like a good thing of to feel seen and known is about how does that person approach you, back to empathy, right? How does that person approach you? How does that person show that they care? They give you that attention in like in a good boundaried way, as opposed to they need to know exactly what I am going through and they need to know exactly what my experience is because they have also lived that experience. And so I think that that is a very big misconception with loneliness, especially I feel like when I was younger and I was just starting to learn how to form these like healthy attachments with different people and different friend groups, I was looking for people who were very much like-minded. And I was actually quite surprised to find that a lot of my attachment was with people who weren't exactly the same. And it makes it so that if we only see it from this view of we're only going to be able to have our loneliness, quote unquote, cured by people who are like-minded, our world becomes very small. But if we are able to look and see how we can relate to others who aren't in that same realm, who don't have those same outlooks on what's going on, our loneliness possibilities, you know, of people who can help us through that, it becomes much bigger and wider. And so I think that that's an important thing to recognize when it comes to loneliness. It's not because we just don't have anyone right there who's exactly like us.
I think the other thing to understand is that we perpetuate loneliness when we refuse to be seen and known.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that we do that intentionally, but when we withdraw, when we say, I can't go to that because I don't have a spouse. That
yeah.
I
don't have the same interests. I don't do that. Yeah.
Right. So I've struggled with infertility. We don't have children. And I think about all the times I could have withdrawn for that fact in my life. I could have said, well, we don't have kids. We won't engage in those types of things.
Like we had a celebration for my youngest kid and you came, and that's something that often people would not come to because pain, lots of other reasons, and you came.
Mm-hmm.
And in those moments, recognizing I have a part to play in the world, that and my motherhood isn't tied necessarily to giving birth or to, I won't say raising children in the home, because now I've had plenty of children come in my home.
I was just going to say.
But to this idea of my role is important as a woman, as a caregiver, as a nurturer, as somebody with empathy, as somebody who can hold space for somebody who is different from me.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually created wonderful bonds and moved me into a place where I very much see myself in motherhood. And I am seen in motherhood by other people now, where the people who are closest to me, if I was to say something like, well, I'm not a mother, they will quickly correct me.
Mm-hmm.
Now. And that was hard because there was a time where I had to make the choice of, was I going to withdraw from those situations? And now I love being places where maybe if I focused on the difference, I would feel alone. But when I focus on the connectedness, that I feel the connection.
Yeah, I agree.
We recently had a loneliness event that affected the entire world with COVID-19 and lockdowns.
Yes.
Even introverts eventually hit their point where they were like, you know, I liked to see someone occasionally.
Well, I feel like with introverts, part of their need is to say, I've validated my need that people can get together and I can go be part of it when I want, but I can also come back to my home base. And they didn't have that option. It was like, I can't just go get the connection when I want it, because we're humans. We all want some sort of connection. And introverts were like, I can't even go get the little I need. I'm just here, right?
Because of a medical condition I have, I can't go out in the sunlight. I can't do anything physical. So my life revolves around being in my dark office, doing therapy, which is mostly smiling and nodding, right? And then just being at home. And I got to the point 4 or 5 months into the pandemic where I was like, oh no, everyone else is experiencing what I experienced. There was more empathy than that. And eventually I was like, well, geez, I sometimes liked to, you know, go to the store at night.
I think it's interesting too, to recognize as people experience loneliness, some people didn't know how to pull out of that loneliness. And are still struggling. And I think especially our younger population, where school went online and those kinds of things. I remember at the very beginning thinking, we do not teach kids how to be lonely. Most kids are raised in a family situation or a group situation. And then their peer groups are an important part of their development. No matter what happens there, it's an important part of their development. And they were removed from peer groups.
Yep.
And that removal from peer groups affected their ability to move into their own development stages of identity formation, away from their family and those kinds of things. And so now we're seeing and have continued to see that that generation is going to be affected by those years of isolation.
Yeah. I think that that's an important thing to say, is when loneliness becomes consistent in that sense of it isn't looked at, and it isn't looked at as how can we work through the emotion rather than sitting in it, that's when depression breeds. That's when anxiety breeds. It's when it just becomes bigger and bigger and more of an issue. Because I'm thinking about it, just a lot of, I had a couple parents that are like, I don't get why my kid can't, you know, get out of this depression though, and can't not feel lonely. Because I mean, they had Zoom, they had all these things, they were on TikTok, they were on all these, you know, garbage apps, but they were on all these different things. Why can't my kid just pull out of it? And I'm looking at it and saying, yes, they're in Zoom, they're in rooms, they can quote unquote chat through like Messenger and things like that. But there's a different environment when, you know, your teacher gives an assignment and you look over to your friend and you both like have wide eyes and you're like, I didn't know we had the assignment. That's a bonding experience there.
It's a seen and known experience.
Yeah. And you can't do that on Zoom. You can't look at the camera and be like, we have a personal connection right now when there's a group of 30, right?
Sure. Zoom is absolutely better than nothing, but it's still not like being in person.
Yeah.
Solitary confinement, where you're absolutely lonely, is so damaging to the mind that people develop psychosis.
I mean, we have laws against how long someone can be in solitary confinement, as far as even in the legal system.
6 weeks is the maximum, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to recognize we need to not put ourselves in solitary confinement, because when we feel lonely, again, it does breed depression. Depression does breed withdrawal and isolation. So it's important that you create habits in your system, no matter how much grocery pickup there is and other things, that you actually move into space. And that can be as simple as going to a park and feeling the connectedness of being in a community. The idea of pets can move into us being seen and known, and we could, that can be really healthy. I have a pandemic puppy or two.
I have one.
I wanted one.
You had you a baby. Had a
pandemic baby.
That's not what I wanted. No, I'm just kidding.
It is what you wanted.
Oh, wow.
Let's not unpack that.
Ruby, if you listen to this later in life, I love you.
And we'll take you if he doesn't want you.
But I think that what you bring up too, it's not just like loneliness, find connection. That's not just the easy be all end all. Again, love the idea of be curious about the emotion. Why is it coming up? What is this need telling me right now? Right? Is it that I am okay being an introvert, but I do need occasional checking in with other people and I need to find the balance of that? Or is it the idea of maybe the way I am being with people isn't really the connecting experience I want, right?
Especially if you're finding that you're alone in a crowded room, that might be that you need to reevaluate whether you're really seen and known or if you're trying to fit in.
Yeah.
But as you're talking about that, I want to talk a little bit about when people tell me I'm lonely, here are some things that I do. Early socialization in children, it's called parallel play. And so often with even adults, what I'll say is we need to find parallel play situations, classrooms, congregations, whether they be a church group or a support group of some kind, those kinds of things where you can be in the room and have some community mm-hmm. is really powerful and important. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I find really important is the idea of hearing people talk and discussing ideas and doing those kinds of things. And so when we start, you may say, but I'm really alone. I don't have a friend. Okay. That's very real. Some of us start from that place. And what you need to do is get into a parallel play situation where you can discuss The Bachelor.
Yeah.
Pull it back around. Or you can discuss a book, or you can make eye contact mm-hmm. about the weather or something like that. And so moving into those locations where you can do that is really powerful.
Yeah. Or start a podcast. And then you do that.
But also this idea too of, as the research comes out about social media, mm-hmm. right? And we question whether social media is good or bad. One of the things we're finding, and now I'm not a stats person, that's your job, Taylor, but I read a great article that says it's not social media that's the problem. It's the fact that we're not being social on social media. So if you're finding that you're scrolling, but you're not commenting and creating communication and connection, then social media is going to be a comparison experience for you. Where if you're getting on and you're looking at Taylor's adorable children, mm-hmm. or if you're watching a puppy video, or if you're, you know, and you're saying, oh my gosh, I love that, you know, I'm calling people by names and I'm doing those kinds of things, that actually social media can be healthy. But if I'm just creating content to get likes or responses, that's not the same thing as seen and known.
Yeah. Or if I'm all I'm doing is posting pictures, all I'm doing is about myself, that's also not finding connection, because we can't wait for other people to comment on ours. Like what you're saying, I need to go and be part of someone else's realm and comment on them. I see a lot of people like, well, I comment all the time on social media. Like I put pictures up all the time. That's how I'm trying to find connection. That's you just looking for someone else to take that realm. And so I think in the end, when we're talking about this loneliness aspect, it's not the fact that we need to be saying it's because you did something wrong, so just fix it and then you won't be lonely. It's the fact of my needs not getting met. How do I evaluate that? And then go from there to see what's going to be the best fit for it. And also just know that loneliness isn't a bad thing. We're allowed to have a little bit of it. It's just when it goes into those deeper realms that we need to have a way to protect ourselves.
And give yourself permission to parallel play, get in mm-hmm. the same space and actively participate. Turn on your Zoom camera.
The biggest complaint in groups.
Ask a question on social media. Ask somebody about their job. Ask somebody about their pet. Plan to go somewhere where you can have that common humanity experience and that empathy experience. And you'll find that if you do that more consistently, that you're going to connect with people and you're going to develop friendships. As I just look at Taylor and Haley here, I think it was a smirk in a room or eye contact that created the friendship that we have today. And it was that continued, hey, do you want to read this book? Hey, what do you think about that? Like, those are the ways we created the connection. And so if you're looking for that, you have to engage with people.
Agreed.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We'd love to hear from you.